The remote hearing of the Capital Investment Committee for February 16th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Lanchesky, please take the roll.
Members, you may unmute yourself when your name is called. Representative Fooley.
Lee, present.
Representative Fooley, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Present.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abaje.
McBadge, present.
Representative Esther Abaje, present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids, present.
Representative Greg Davids, present. Representative Keith Franke.
Frankie, present.
Representative Keith Franke, present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Mike Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen.
Rick Hansen, present.
Representative Rick Hansen, present. Representative John Hewitt.
Hewitt, present.
Representative John Hewitt, present. Representative Leon Lilly. Representative Eric Lucero.
Happy Tuesday.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran.
Present.
Representative Rena Moran, present. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Happy National Pancake Day, I'm present.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer, present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West.
Present.
Representative Nolan West, present. Representative Jay Zhang. Representative Leon Lilly. Representative Jay Zhang. Members, with the conclusion of the roll call, please mute your devices. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Lanchesky. A quorum is present. Representative Murphy, do I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 11th?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes for February 11th as printed.
Vice Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for February 11th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 11th are approved. Members, today my bill, House File 728, is up, and now Vice Chair Murphy will preside as chair while I present House File 728.
Representative Lee, welcome to the committee. Will you proceed? I believe that you have an amendment.
Chair Murphy, before we take up the amendment, I want to move House File 728 with a recommendation that it is referred to the Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy Committee.
Thank you. House File 728 is before the committee to be recommended that it is referred to Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy Committee. There is an author's amendment in our packet, coded HO728A1-1. Representative Lee?
Yes, so Madam Chair, I want to move the A1-1 amendment. And real quickly for our member, the substantive change in the A1-1 amendment deletes Section 1. Insert $300 million as the appropriation, $200 million to Minneapolis and $100 million to St. Paul, and adds a requirement that grant funds to be used for redevelopment in the areas that furthers the goals of rebuilding and retaining existing small businesses and enhancing economic opportunities for long-term residents of the cities.
Are there any questions? All in favor signify by saying, all in favor of HO-728A1-1 amendment, as Representative Lee stated, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Lee, please explain the amendment, the bill as amended. House File 728 as amended.
Thank you, Chair Murphy and members, for the opportunity to present House File 728. My overview of the bill as amended will only cover the provisions of the bill that pertain to the redevelopment of the eligible areas and not the standard language for appropriation bonds authorization. We do have MMB, DEET, and the Department of Commerce and city staff available to answer any technical questions later. So in the bill, we have a definition subdivision that defines several terms for the purpose of this section. I will note that city in this bill means the city of Minneapolis or St. Paul. The eligible area means an area in Minneapolis or St. Paul adversely affected by civil unrest during the peacetime emergency declaring the governor's emergency executive order 20-64. And redevelopment for members includes acquisition of real property, site preparation, pre-design, design, engineering, repair, renovation, or construction of buildings, infrastructure, and related site amenities, landscaping, streetscaping, land banking for future development, or financing of any of these activities by a private party pursuant to an agreement with the city. Redevelopment does not include any project costs eligible for compensation from insurance policies, government entities, or other organizations. So in the following subdivision, MMB is authorized to sell and issue redevelopment appropriation bonds to capitalize an account in the Minneapolis Commercial Property Development Fund and in an account in the St. Paul Housing and Redevelopment Authority's funds to pay for redevelopment in the eligible areas. The proceeds of the appropriation bond must be credited to a special appropriation redevelopment bond proceed funds in the state treasury. The terms of any sales of any series of appropriation bonds may not exceed 21 years. MMB may enter into various agreements relating to the appropriation bonds to meet the legal requirements. Subdivision in the bill provides for the bond proceeds to be appropriated to deed for grants to the city of Minneapolis. Like I mentioned before, $200 million in the city of St. Paul, Housing and Redevelopment Authority, $100 million. MMB may also use the bond proceeds for debt service on the bonds. And then in the bill, before you, subdivision 10 begins on line 6.1, creates four requirements for the grants agreement between DEED and the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. These requirements include the city must segregate the funds in a separate account. Any proceeds from the sale of property financed with grant funds must be paid to the state if the sale of the property occurs during the term of the grant agreement. The grant must further the goals of rebuilding and retaining existing small businesses and enhancing economic opportunities for long-term residents. And the fourth requirement, each grant recipient must report to deed on the expenditures made with the grant funds. This bill is needed, members, to help rebuild and retain the existing small businesses that were impacted. And Madam Chair, now I would like to turn it over to our testifiers.
All right. House File 728, as amended, is before the House. Representative Lee, the chair, explained the bill as amended. And now, people that are interested in the outcome of the bill are ready to testify. Each person has up to 3 minutes to discuss what they have to say. Only 3 minutes. No extra time. Please identify yourself for the record and Begin your testimony as soon as possible. Representative Louis Lau. Or Mr. Louis Lau from the Peking Garden.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Louis Lau, and I'm a co-owner of Peking Garden Restaurants in the city of St. Paul. This is a very small family-owned restaurant that is operated by five brothers and sisters. We have been in this community and this location for 15 years. Our business was one of the anchor business at Midway Plaza near Alliance Field on University and Snelling. We have a lot of dedication and loyal customers from the neighboring community and throughout the city. I know many legislators who frequent visit at our restaurants. Thank you for supporting us. Unfortunately, on May 28 last year, our business was destroyed in the Midway Plaza during the civil unrest. We were one of many businesses that were impacted by the civil unrest. In this adversity and painful experience, I found out and realized the love is surrounding us. There are many my customers, they are my community, and they are all my friends that deeply touched my heart. Along the way for rebuilding our business, help has come to us in every direction. Yes. This is St. Paul, our community. With the help from many Peking Garden friends and community members, we are able to relocate and rebuild our business in the nearby location in St. Paul. We are committed to our community and to our customers. I'm grateful to the many legislators who visit us this summer and give us the opportunity to share our story and learn about our business. In addition to meeting with legislators, we met with the mayor and his staff. Everyone has expressed concern and interest in helping our community rebuild. I'm here today to let you know we are still suffering and we still need the support of the state to ensure our business can survive under the current economic environment. First, we were hit by COVID-19, then the civil unrest. Our community needs your support so we can try and get back to normal. I'm hoping to bring safety and comfort to our community. I'm also wanting to build harmony in a diverse society. We've been doing this for the past 15 years, and I know we can do it again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lau. The second person to testify is Mr. Rob Yang.
Hello, you guys can hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. First off, I want to thank everyone for their time and allowing me to share my testimony with you today. My name is Rob Yang. I would describe myself as a proud Hmong American Minnesotan, family first businessman. My family and I are Hmong refugees from Laos. My father fought communism in the Vietnam War with the United States and later brought us here in order to give us a better life in the land of the free. I started my business Phenom in 2008. We are a family footwear and apparel store located in the Midway area in St. Paul, as well as the North Loop area in Minneapolis. Both my stores were looted and I sustained over $100,000 in physical damages, along with over $400,000 in lost inventory. We were underinsured because we were closed for business due to the governor's COVID order, but we were still receiving frequent shipments of new products. On the day of the looting, I, along with my neighbor and property manager, witnessed firsthand the chaos and destruction to my business. I was no more than 15 feet away from the entrance where I would regularly greet customers while complete strangers took their turns looting my American dream and 13 years of hard work. Immediately afterwards, friends, families, community members, and organizations reached out to me and asked me if they could do anything to help with the damages. I thanked everyone, but told them to help the other businesses that had sustained more damages. In truth, my pride wouldn't let me take a handout, even though I needed the help. I believe the other business owners feel the same way, because as business owners, we believe hard work pays off. Pastor Ben, who was a friend of the family, taught me that there was nothing wrong with receiving help, and that's what the community was here for. They help each other when it is needed. Currently, our St. Paul location is only open for online curbside pickup, and we have moved our North Loop location to Deakintown due to the fact that we feel the new area is safer. My St. Paul location still has repairs needed, and we have estimates around $30,000 to get it back to prior looting conditions. I grew up on the east side of St. Paul. I lived in the Frogtown area where I attended school at Concordia University, St. Paul. I remember going to eat at all the different restaurants on University Avenue in between classes. Now I have a wife and three kids, and I still bring them there to the areas affected by the riot to support the local businesses and try to get our lives as close to normal as possible. I refuse to see myself as a victim, but rather as a resident that overcame hardship with the help of my community. Now it's the time for all of us to see how we can help these many businesses and organizations affected and help them rise from the ashes and destruction. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Yang. Appreciate your help. The next person, Va Megan Tao, Asian Economic Development Association.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, something's wrong with my camera. You can't see me. Let me put up a picture. There you go. Thank you again, Madam Chair. My name is Ba Meng Tao. I'm with the Asian Economic Development Association. We are a community-based economic development nonprofit. Our offices are in the Frogtown Rondo neighborhood at the University and Western. We serve Asian small businesses throughout the Twin Cities. We've been around for more than 10 years. So this past summer, right after the civil unrest, the ensuing civil unrest after the killing of George Floyd, our organization stepped up to do what we can to help businesses that were affected. As you all know, hundreds and hundreds of businesses were affected, damaged across Minneapolis to St. Paul. And throughout 2020, most of what we have been doing has been providing technical assistance and funding to these businesses. So we supported more than 50 businesses damaged during the civil unrest. Immediately after the civil unrest, the day after, I visited many of these businesses personally. And spoke to many of these business owners. These are family-owned businesses, and they provide jobs for people from our neighborhoods, hundreds of jobs from our neighborhoods. Some of you had visited these businesses yourselves, but if you recall the scenes, I mean, the scenes I visited were like tornado or fire scenes, like tornado and fire swept through them. Broken windows, doors, looted store places. And to this day, some of those businesses are still boarded up. The whole summer was traumatic for many of us in many ways. But what I saw and what I heard from shell shock businesses will never forget. They witnessed their lives, work, and investments disappeared overnight. And many of them were crushed. And many of these businesses have not recovered to this day. Some have opened, some have partially reopened. Others are still trying to rebuild. The ones that were completely damaged, many of them, we don't know if they will ever reopen. And those people who lost their jobs will ever coming back. Those jobs will be coming back. So there's still much to be done. There's still a lot of damages that are still out there, and there's a lot to rebuild. These businesses are very important for our neighborhood and for the city of St. Paul. The jobs that have been lost, we need to get to bring those jobs back. So as others have said, we came together and supported these businesses, but we need to stick together and do more. The risk of displacement is greater than ever. With COVID and with the civil unrest, we lost many businesses. And I said, we want these businesses to come back. Displacement will have a devastating impact on our neighborhood, where small businesses is the lifeline of the community. So thanks again for this opportunity to speak. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I urge all of you to really listen to the business owners and support them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chad Kules.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Good morning, Chair Murphy and members of the Capital Investment Committee. I'm Chad Kules, Executive Director of the Midway Chamber of Commerce. We're a member-based organization with a mission to build a stronger Midway. Since our founding in 1919, we have seen many changes along University Avenue, but one thing has remained true. The corridor depends on the ingenuity and hard work of entrepreneurs whom neighbors in our community depend on to provide goods and services. On May 22nd, I became the first person to try Bole Express, a fast casual concept of Bole Ethiopian cuisine, as the owner prepared to open his new concept May 30th. But on May 29th, he watched the building that housed both of his locations burn to the ground. Within days of the civil unrest, Midway Chamber joined forces with the St. Paul Area Chamber and the St. Paul Downtown Alliance to create one of the handful of funds aimed at helping those who had property damage. Through this process, we read through applications and learned more about their stories. As of today, we have helped fund 77 small businesses with around $900,000 of relief. The funds were donated by our business community and by current and former residents who sent in $10, $20 just to show they care. I know some of you have been able to do a walking tour of university, and I thank you for taking the time to see it. If anyone else would like to do so, I am happy to give you a tour as well. Seeing the damage up close and walking along university was absolutely gut-wrenching for me, but needed to fully understand the damage. Like many main streets, University Avenue has been revitalized by immigrants and refugees. An estimate in 2017 stated around 300 minority-owned businesses in or near the Midway. This proposed legislation would help businesses by building community wealth. Community wealth helps develop assets where the wealth stays local and helps build more vibrant neighborhoods. It increases asset ownership, creates anchor jobs locally by broadening ownership over capital, and ensures local economic stability. These are all essential in rebuilding our community in a way it can work for more residents, and this proposed legislation helps accomplish this by stating funds will be used to redevelop and rebuild existing small businesses and enhance economic opportunities for long-term residents. As our neighborhood name suggests, we are midway between the downtowns, but our businesses can't be in limbo as they try to rebuild themselves and reopen. Please help us ensure we can rebuild a stronger Midway. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Barton Inks, St. Paul Fire Chief.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Barton Inks. I go by Butch Inks. I'm a 26-year veteran of the St. Paul Fire Department and currently the fire chief for the department. I just want to start by saying thank you for your time and consideration. During the civil unrest, the St. Paul Fire Department responded to over 250 calls. And of those 250 calls, almost 50 of those were confirmed structure fires. And to put that in perspective for everyone, that's about 6 months worth of work in a 12-hour period. As we responded, we needed protection from the St. Paul Police Department as well as the National Guard, as all of our responses were during active civil unrest and under violence directed at our firefighters in the forms of bricks being thrown at us as well as bottles. Even through the violence, every single call that came in, we responded to every single time. And we did our absolute best to minimize the damage that occurred that night, that day. As you've heard, many of you may have visited University Avenue. I was down there during many of the visits, if not all of them, explaining and talking through what went on that day and in the next days to come. And as you also heard, you've been invited to do that again. And if anyone would like to do that, I'm available and to walk through and talk through what actually happened that evening. We're not just firefighters, we're members of this community. And the devastation is still apparent. We still see the structures that were damaged as the businesses are still boarded up. As you've heard, the community is still impacted today. Our firefighters are impacted as well, as we are community members and take pride in protecting our neighbors and did our absolute best to minimize the damage that day. Again, I want to thank you for your time and your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. We appreciate your service to the community also. Mr. Jimenez.
Hey, buenos dias, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Henry Jimenez, the Executive Director of the Latino Economic Development Center. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee, and most importantly, thank you to the many of you that visited both Minneapolis and St. Paul impacted areas, not one but several times, and for reaching out to me and my colleagues to learn more about the needs of the small business community. I'm here to testify in support of House File 728 as amended. For close to 20 years, LEDC has helped hundreds of small Latino-owned businesses start or expand their businesses throughout Minnesota, with most establishing in the Twin Cities along the business corridors that this bill intends to support. While we take pride in helping develop businesses, we are not the only ones. We have provided technical assistance to businesses to have established themselves here in Minnesota. Many of our colleagues have also done the same and have committed decades to doing so. While we know that the first couple of years of a business are the most vital, they also create a determination and a spirit of entrepreneurship that is unmatched during this time. They have been able to weather some of the most difficult times. Nevertheless, they have proven that their businesses' models work. They have established themselves as staples of our communities. And you can see this as you heard from Lewis and Rob Yang, and as you will hear from Abe and Christian, who will also testify later today. These are all businesses that have had to become established, successful, and many even expanded. We no longer were investing in them because they were now investing in us as contributing members of our community. Clearly, a lot has happened in 2020, but regardless of what got to us here today or for this ask, I can assure you that the best investment is in people and businesses that have a proven track record, such as the ones that you have heard from today. Successful businesses, as the hundreds of businesses impacted in June. You have an opportunity today to invest in proven businesses, not one, but hundreds of businesses. It's not a political move, it's a business move in which the people of Minnesota have a significant return on their investment today. It is clear to me that my colleagues who have supported small businesses much longer than we have a business works, don't, what we know is that if a business works, don't mess with it. In fact, invest in it. Many businesses in these corridors have been tenants in the buildings they worked out of and were either damaged or destroyed for a year in June. I strongly believe with the support of funding from this bill, several of them would have the opportunity to own these businesses, own these buildings, restore them, or be able to rebuild them and support the corridor economically, who is obviously vital to Minnesota and the region. I know they will be successful because they have already revitalized these business corridors. Ms. Chair and members of the committee, I ask you to make the best investment you can today, and that is to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jimenez. Welcome, Chris Montana.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Lee. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you all today. I'll try to be brief. I grew up in the Lake Street corridor, and I own a small business, Denord Craft Spirits, a small micro distillery, and we sustained some damage in the uprising, although we did better than most because we were insured. I watched that corridor go from, you know, vacant buildings to a vibrant community, largely and slowly through the investment of immigrant communities. And I also watched it burn. It was heartbreaking to see. But I'm here today because I believe strongly that business is a path forward for communities of color. And I think that for the business community, we need to have support from all people. And one way to get that support is all people need to see themselves reflected in that community. And this bill is an opportunity to rebuild and sustain some of the businesses that were already there and help to get us towards that positive business community where everyone sees themselves reflected. You know, we can't wait that the slow process that rebuilt Lake Street over 30 years from when I was introduced to it in the early 90s. You know, we can't wait. I suppose maybe it's a little more than 30 years now. We can't wait another 30. In that time, it'll be scooped up. And big business and large money will come in and take it out. People like me, we don't have a whole heck of a lot. I started my business with $60,000 because I couldn't raise any money. It didn't come from deep pockets. And a lot of the immigrant communities and a lot of the communities of color who fought and scrapped to build the businesses that they have similar stories. Mine's not unique. And so if we want to preserve those communities and that business community, that slice of the business community and the vibrancy that they bring, then you have to pay the price for it. And this bill moves us towards paying part of that price. So I hope that you will support it. I appreciate everyone who has come down, visited the corridor. I hope that you continue to do so. And I hope that this continues to be front of mind. And I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. Allison Sharkey.
Good morning. Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and committee members. My name is Allison Sharkey. I'm the Executive Director of the Lake Street Council. Thank you for your time, especially those of you who were able to visit the area last summer. We've been amazed and overwhelmed by the incredible support shown for our small business community since last May. Over 80,000 individual donors from around Minnesota and around the world have donated to our fund to support our small businesses, as have over 100 corporations and foundations from Minnesota and around the country. But there are still significant unmet needs, and we need state support specifically to close a gap in redevelopment costs. Lake Street is one of the most important commercial corridors in the state. Over 2,000 small businesses operate here, side by side with several major employers. Together, they provide tens of thousands of jobs. So Lake Street struggled in the 70s and 80s, but the commitment of entrepreneurs who started businesses here brought the corridor back to life, and it has stayed strong ever since, until this year. Now the scene of a disaster, the burned out buildings, boarded up and broken windows, and vacant lots are keeping customers away. The future of our business community, and more importantly, the employees and families that they sustain are at risk, and that depression could last decades. Luckily, our business community really wants to reinvest. Several entrepreneurs who were displaced are ready to move up from renting to buy their own property. And the entrepreneurs who own burned down properties haven't yet put their properties up for sale. However, as they're now receiving final decisions from their insurance companies and they're starting to get estimates on rebuilding, they're finding that there's a big financing gap. Among small businesses, we're seeing that insurance is covering anywhere from 0 to about 40% of losses, with 25% being pretty common. To suddenly replace a 100-year-old building with one that's more appropriate for today's needs requires additional equity that's generally far beyond what a typical small business owner can access on their own. A construction company that's been doing a lot of work on the corridor has estimated a gap of $200 million for rebuilding. So that number is only for the Lake Street corridor, and it only includes small businesses, not the national stores or property owned by larger developers. So far, the Lake Street Council's invested $7 million in 350 damaged small businesses, and we've pledged another $5 million in support. The City of Minneapolis, Twin Cities Local Initiative Support Corporation, and other funders have committed around another $20 million. But local funding isn't enough to address a disaster of this size. I want to mention that rebuilding is not an impossible task. So there's several exciting projects that are in the works that would bring back displaced businesses, that would add new incubator space, particularly for Black-owned businesses, and that would, at the same time, add desperately needed affordable housing while we're at it. We've started to line up financing, but in every case, a gap remains. The city's commercial redevelopment fund is a really excellent mechanism for helping fill the gap, but it needs additional capital. So we could ignore this gap and the projects will falter and the property will either sit vacant for a long time or end up sold to out-of-state investors who don't care about Minnesota. Or we can come together and invest in redevelopment, which will leverage a tremendous amount of local investment and energy. This bill provides the resources to assure that these projects can move forward. I don't think we should miss the opportunity. Finally, I want to personally thank the business owners who came today. So many small business owners have had their lives completely turned around, and they continue to show up and advocate not just for themselves, but for every impacted business along Lake Street, Chicago Avenue, West Broadway, downtown, and University Avenue. It's no secret that there's political division on this issue of state support for rebuilding and recovery, but I'm asking you to remember that these are real people that are working to overcome tremendous difficulties to support their families, their communities, and the state. Rebuilding will take all of us, which is why we continue to advocate at every level of government. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Mr. Abe Demage.
Abe Demage, thank you.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you for taking my calls today, or taking, you know, for asking me to testify on this. I have not prepared for this. I'm going to tell you guys straight how I feel about it. It was very emotional, and I still feel like the city is burning down when I saw it on June 1st, May 28, 2020. We are originally from Ethiopia. Me and my brother, we came here to look for American dream. We went to Morris, Minnesota, just like anybody else, to find the American dream. We worked very hard, saved some money. We started from a delivery guys and started owning our own property and our own business. We started hiring people from our own neighborhood, local, mainly people of color from our community. And you guys saw it on TV and then read it on paper. Chicago Lake Furniture burned down to the ground. We saw it in our own eyes, holding hand each other. And it's very emotional. We need to put our differences aside, and you guys need to come to one table together. We paid our taxes like anybody else. We're no different than you guys. No difference. You guys need to put differences aside and come and rebuild our town. Our Lake Street is not like it used to be anymore. No customer even walking by right now. It's getting looted day by day if this thing has not been rebuilt. We cannot wait any longer. All our politicians who are different, whether Republican and Democrats, we need to come to the same table, guys. We need your help. We cannot wait any longer. If you guys want us to pay taxes and hire employees, let's come together. We are very open. We're still optimistic about this situation is going to change. So please, I urge you, I'm begging you guys to come into the table and let's rebuild this town together. St. Paul, Lake Street, North Minneapolis, we all want people. Tomorrow could be Edina or other neighborhood. We're all going to stand by you guys as well because we went through this. 2020 is not going to be forgotten. We got hit from COVID to civil unrest. It's not an easy thing. Especially this day was very tough for me. I'm taking my own brother to the hospital that created a stress on him. He cannot able to work any longer. It's not fair, guys. What created this is because of the civil unrest. We lost a business that was built for the last 30 years, created jobs. This is not fair. So please, I urge every one of you guys who's sitting today and listening to this, if you understand me clearly, please, I urge you guys to come up together and let's rebuild this town. I don't want to see border businesses any longer. We are opening and vulnerable to looters. That's what this civil unrest created because the peaceful protest got hijacked. We all know that. So I urge you guys, and I think I'm done. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kenya McKnight-Ahad.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Please good morning. Present.
Thank you. Good morning, representatives. My name is Kenya McKnight-Ahad. I'm the president and founder of the Black Women's Wealth Alliance. We are located in North Minneapolis on West Broadway, Emerson and West Broadway. And we provide historical Black women with cultural wealth building, education, Black women entrepreneurs and workers. And under the COVID and civil uprisings, we have the honor and challenge of serving over 400 Black impacted workers and entrepreneurs statewide. We primarily serve in Minneapolis and St. Paul and Brooklyn Park. And I myself am a longtime resident of North Minneapolis for 35 years of my life. So I grew up there. And as an African-American, I grew up in this country under generations of disinvestment, racial inequities, economically, et cetera. I come to you today to talk a little bit about my journey in now moving from just being a business owner, because I'm a business owner serving other businesses and workers, to pursuing my dream of owning commercial property along West Broadway that I'm now in the process of because of the program and resources afforded to me by the city of Minneapolis, which at one point did not seem possible. And today it's more than possible, where I've been awarded over $500,000 from a redevelopment fund to pursue my dream of purchasing a commercial building that will provide more businesses with opportunity to enhance our local corridor in North Minneapolis. The building I'm pursuing is just one block from where I currently work, which that location has been impacted by the what I call civil uprisings, which is also due to, you know, as you know, generations of disinvestment and racial issues between African Americans and our law enforcement, which led to the unfortunate death of George Floyd. So I want to just place that where it needs to be, that it isn't just the civil uprisings. It was someone who lost their life that caused all of this. And so let's not forget that. And that's very personal to me because I'm of that very community who still struggles with these things. And so I'm telling you today that this program, this investment that you're making, is not only about just rebuilding our businesses, but it's also about building new dreams and breaking generations of disinvestment where property, commercial property ownership once didn't seem real to build up places like North Minneapolis is today. And I'm a witness to that because of my own testimony of now being able to purchase property in the very community I grew up with to make a difference and provide a pathway for other businesses and community members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. McKnight-Ahad. We appreciate your testimony and the testimony of all you business owners that came before us and have hopes and dreams and are willing to reinvest and work in partnership with the community to rebuild. We appreciate very much all your testimony that you gave. At this time, we will receive brief updates from each city's planning and economic development office on the scope of the damage before we go to questions and statements from the committee members that have their hands up and will have their hands up as we begin. Nicole Goodman is Director of Planning and Economic Development for St. Paul. Ms. Goodman. 3 minutes.
Yes, thank you. I'll be brief. Good morning, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and committee members. My name is Nicole Goodman. I am the Director of Planning and Economic Development for the City of St. Paul. I'm actually new to Minnesota, having moved here in August during this eerie time of COVID and in the wake of a very painful moment in our history here. I did not live here when the unthinkable murder of George Floyd occurred, nor the devastation that took place thereafter. But I come from a city that knows disaster and recovery. I come from Oklahoma City, where 25 years ago, a devastating bombing took 168 lives and damaged or destroyed much of our downtown. The emotional recovery in Oklahoma City has continued over decades, as it will here, but the physical recovery is complete. With necessary funding, Oklahoma City rebuilt the infrastructure, the buildings, and the businesses in the impacted area. The Twin Cities will recover physically from this disaster, as Oklahoma City did, but it will take time. It will take the coordination and cooperation of everyone you have heard from today, and it will take resources. University Avenue in St. Paul is a richly diverse, vibrant area where many immigrant families, some who escaped war in their home countries, came to Minnesota, came to the Twin Cities, and built businesses and lives for themselves. Many were underinsured for a tragedy of this magnitude, and some of them lost everything. We had over 261 businesses damaged in St. Paul, and many have been repaired, but many, many still need repairs. As the rebuilding takes place, there is a true and present danger of the loss of the unique character and culture of the area, particularly if small BIPOC and immigrant-owned businesses are displaced. Providing a path to recovery and property ownership for business owners will be key to ensuring the area retains its character and rich culture. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Director Goodman. Director Eric Hansen, Minneapolis.
Madam Chair, members of the community, thank you so much for the time and the partnership between the state and the City of Minneapolis on so many economic development projects through the years, and I'm specifically thankful for you to think about this. We have had a tremendous amount of damage in Minneapolis, as you know, affecting almost all areas of town. And the damage estimates are north of $350 million across the city, with almost 22 million square feet of commercial space being impacted through some sort of damage. We are hopeful that we can work together to help bring resources. You've heard from a number of our community partners. We work together across community organizations and businesses to bring in resources, understanding that there will be a gap in funding for some of the rebuilding efforts, and we want to make sure that we are investing with the community ownership that is so important to wealth building. And I'm going to cede the rest of my time to Jim Terrell, who is our program supervisor and oversees the Commercial Property Development Fund, which would be the tool we would use.
Mr. Terrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Eric. And I apologize for not having video. My laptop decided this morning to have serious problems, but I'm happy to be here. As Eric indicated, the damage is profound, and the tool that we are proposing to use, as you know, it's in the legislation or the draft legislation, is the Commercial Property Development Fund. It's a very unique tool that recognizes a systemic disinvestment in communities that are economically challenged, and it was designed to help businesses like the ones that have testified earlier today. We're very proud of this tool. It has limited funding from city resources to the tune right now of about $7 million. And this potential funding would allow that tool to impact literally scores of businesses. And we think also serve as a model for reinvestment in challenged communities throughout the country. And so we are very thankful for the opportunity to promote the tool and this effort, and I'll stand for questions as they arise on the fund.
Thank you, Mr. Terrell. Thank you, Mr. Hansen. And you have all the testifiers today have been right on the mark for time, and I praise you. Now, can the committee members do as well as the testifiers did on keeping to time? Remember, your questions shouldn't go on and on and on and on and on and on. Just ask your question or make your statement, and don't have the question longer than what the answer could be. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And let's see. Okay. First of all, with appropriation bonds, we are essentially being asked to use a high interest credit card in a time of budget uncertainty. I'm concerned about the future impact on bonding and the precedents that we may be setting. Now, that said, make no mistake that we want to see help given where help is needed. And we are willing to work with Chair Lee and other members of the committee to reach that point where we feel that, again, the help is given to where the help is needed. I have a question that I would ask, I think, Mr. Lee. We have been given an amount for recommended bonding capacity. Does this bill today of $300 million count against the budgeted amount?
Representative Lee.
No, Ms. Andy Lee.
Mr. Lee. Mr. Andrew Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl. Yes, so appropriation bonds would count towards the debt management guideline number one, which is the total principal outstanding, and debt management guideline number two, which is that plus the authorized and unissued debt. Currently, the capacity in guideline number one is $3.376 billion, and the capacity in guideline number two is $7.1 billion.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Lee, before you leave, could I ask a question? Representative Erdahl stated the high interest on appropriation bonds. What is the interest on appropriation bond as opposed to GO bond?
Madam Chair and members, the interest rates on GO versus appropriation bond debt can vary slightly because a GO bond has the full faith and credit backing of the state, which means that if the legislature were ever unable to appropriate sufficient funds to back the GO bond, then the state auditor has the requirement to levy a statewide property tax to make good on the debt. Appropriation bonds don't have that same full faith and credit requirement, but they are still pledged securities that the state by statute must make a payment on. So there's a slightly different level of security. In terms of what the differential in interest costs can be, that I might have to defer to MMB on that. That can depend on market conditions of how much of a spread in the market there is for different types of debt. Some examples of recent GO bond sales: in the last August sale, GO various purpose debt got an interest rate of 1.49%. On trunk highway debt got an interest rate of 0.45%. And unfortunately there aren't like appropriation bonds that are sold at exactly the same time, so I can't give you a apples to apples comparison. Some looking at the 2017 appropriation bond sale for Lewis and Clark was at 3.2%, and the 2006 sale for Lewis and Clark was at 2.8%. And so there's a bit of a range there. So I hope that answers your question. Unfortunately, I can't know exactly what the spread would be, and M&B might have something further to add, but I think the interest rate spread depends on the market conditions at the time of the sale.
Thank you. Rep. Erdoff, did you conclude?
Yes, I did.
Okay, thank you, Representative Moran.
Representative Murphy, did you say Moran?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. Good morning, members, and to the testifiers, I want to say thank you all for coming in and to share your story about the impacts of your business. Because of no fault of your own, you have been impacted, whether it was through COVID-19 or the civic unrest, you have been impacted. We know that businesses are the foundation of not only Minnesota, but America. And, you know, historically, we have had these disinvestments around these communities of color who have taken their savings, family savings, to create a business. And so I don't have a question, but I do want to say this is an opportunity for us as legislators who have seen historical disinvestments, you know, through laws and policies and practices that have left these communities out of the process. And this is an opportunity for us to look at appropriation bonds or any other pathways that we can allow businesses to recoup from their losses, but also rebuild, because locally, it is those small businesses, it is those small moms and pop businesses that are hiring people from the community, right, who are investing in the community, and they're taxpayers. It is the taxpayers of the Minneapolis and St. Paul businesses that are paving the way for our rural community. So I want to say thank you for the testifiers, and let's do our due diligence to invest in these businesses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Moran. Representative Esther Abaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I quickly want to say thank you so much to all of the testifiers that were here today. Your testimony shows that how it is vitally important that whenever damage has been done to businesses or homes across the state of Minnesota, we step up to help each other. And I think that's what this appropriations bond bill is doing, stepping up to help each other. Many of the small businesses here have not yet received the necessary help that they need to get back on their feet, which means that we're losing out on an investment in our communities that can help continue to drive the engine of Minnesota by supporting businesses in Minneapolis and St. Paul. In my own district, when you drive up and down West Broadway Avenue, you can still see those scenes of destruction that were left by the civil unrest, but that was no fault of the businesses. And so I think we do have this opportunity here to reinvest and make sure that our businesses come back even stronger. And I think that this fund can definitely be a lifeline for our small businesses, particularly those that are owned by our Black and Brown community members, to make sure that they thrive. So my question actually can go to, I think, Mr. Terrell. If he could just speak a little bit more about the mechanism to ensure that these funds would go to supporting the small businesses that we know that have been most affected through the civil unrest, through this bonding. Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Representative. Yes, the guidelines for the Commercial Property Development Fund, which I believe the members have received, we can certainly get it to you if you have not, list a number of ways in which the city is deliberate in making these funds a priority both for BIPOC-owned businesses as well as businesses in economic challenged communities. That doesn't mean that every dime would go to one of those groups, but clearly the intent of the Commercial Property Development Fund was to focus where there are needs, and we don't need this level of support, forgivable debt, for businesses in downtown Minneapolis. And so to the extent that we are able, by law, by ordinance, by statute, to focus our funds in such a way that they help the communities that need them, we believe that the guidelines do just that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Terrell. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Chair Murphy, and thank you, Chair Lee. I really appreciate all the testimony today. I just, having toured, North Minneapolis on University and Lake Street, it really struck me, and over in the testimony, we were hearing about the American dream. And, my family, when they came through, Ellis Island, they quickly set up businesses in Minnesota. Whalen had a grocery store. They came up, all my family. And I just loved hearing the testimony. Abe was just so powerful, and the others, I'm sorry, I don't know Abe's last name. I'm sorry. Please accept my apology. But, just the hope and the American dream of all this, it just really is powerful. And I totally embrace this, this energy and this importance of this. We as a state, we need Minneapolis and St. Paul to thrive. Don't be fooled and think that we all stand alone, like me as a suburban legislator or in greater Minnesota. We need our core cities to do well. And I'm going to vote for this. I'm so glad that Representative Lee is bringing this forward. It's so vital. As a legislator, I've been here a while. This is, going to be my eighth or ninth term. But, we've helped everybody around the state. And this is what this is. I mean, this is unusual. This isn't a run-of-the-mill, everyday kind of event that happened. And when a tornado comes through, I tell you, I'm going to help you. And I want you to help me, too. I believe that fundamentally as a legislator, that we need to help each other. And this is a little different, but every one of them's got a different story. And just to, I love the hope here of helping these businesses. I went down there to Lake Street just the other day. My dad was heading out of town. I went to Ingebrigtsen's and got some, I happen to be Scandinavian, so I got some soul food for my dad. And, it was just neat that's there. If you're from in many of these different cultures, it's the same for them. This is what we've got to do. We help each other as Minnesota. This is what I believe in. I'm so glad Chair Lee has brought this bill, and I'll happily vote for this. And we have a capacity to help each other in the state. And the day that we don't help each other, it's pretty sad for Minnesota. Anyways, that's more of a comment than anything.
Statements are good. Thank you, Representative Lilly. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, and thank you to all the testifiers who took the time to come in today to share their personal stories and the hardships that they've had to endure. As a minority small business owner myself, I absolutely identify with the stories of working hard, going after the American dream, building a business with blood, sweat, and tears, and prevailing and achieving the success, very much so. And again, I thank each and every small business owner, members of the community who take that step to chase their dreams, because it is not easy to do, that's for sure. I've toured the devastation. I've shaken the hands of these small business owners who were negatively impacted, and it is absolutely devastating as they hold back tears when they are telling the story of how the criminal thugs rampaged, ransacked their businesses. In one particular story that stood out, a small business owner had a safe in his business, his entire life savings, and the deeds to his house, I think it was, and his automobile and other important papers were in this safe. And what the criminal thugs did is they broke into the business, and they literally physically picked up the entire safe, that it was very heavy, and they removed it, and then all the contents therein. and just devastating. I've spoken with residents of North Minneapolis. In fact, I've held, I've organized a donation drive and then taken thousands of dollars of donations down to help those impacted in both Minneapolis and St. Paul. So again, I very much am heartbroken at what happened. Unfortunately, it is the result of failed leadership of those cities. And I'm concerned when I read the bill at the lack of explicit details. I'm concerned that the bill essentially creates an open-ended fund for Minneapolis and St. Paul. So, Madam Vice Chair, my question for the bill author would be, rather than $300 million in upfront appropriation bonds, why shouldn't Minneapolis and St. Paul come to the legislature for assistance to be funded from the general fund?
Thank you, Representative Foodley.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Lucero. You know, that is a possibility too, and you know, that's a conversation that we could have as we move on in the process. What we're proposing here is a different tool for the two cities to move forward. And we know, and you have heard from all these testifiers, the magnitude of the problem that we're seeing. And so this is just one of the many tools that we at the legislature can move forward. And I hope that, you know, we can work together. You know, if you have an idea for general fund appropriations, I'm all ears for us to work together to see how can we assist these small businesses and residents in the two cities that has been impacted by the unrest.
Representative Lucero, does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Nolan West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Andy Lee, from House Research. And what is the total cost of the appropriation bonds over their life? And what's the general fund debt service appropriation required annually for this bill?
Mr. Andy Lee, fiscal analyst Andy Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative West. Certainly, so in your packet, there's a short debt service sheet. And the estimate for annual debt service for $300 million in appropriation bonds is $20,728,000 a year. Assuming that all the bonds are sold at once, and so the first full debt service payment begins in fiscal year 2022, and the life of the bonds, and this is a slightly higher, typically bonds have a 20-year life, but in the legislation right now, there's a 21-year debt service window, I think in case it takes more than 1 year to sell all the bonds. But at that slightly higher estimate, assuming that it's $20.7 million a year for 21 years, the total cost would be $435.2 million, of which $135 million would be the interest, and obviously the $300 million would be the principal. I should probably stress that's probably a slightly higher estimate, and that a lot would depend on the interest rate at the time of the bond sale or multiple bond sales, and that also if there would be refinancing in 10 years, which is allowed for in the legislation. I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you. Hope that was quick enough, Representative.
Thank you. That was good, Representative West. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to, first of all, start off by thanking the testifiers coming here to tell all of us about their experience, open themselves up and be vulnerable. It takes a lot of courage, and have an immense amount of respect for their willingness to share. I also want to make sure that just real quickly we understand some previous comments about the criminal thugs that caused some of the damage, and making sure that we're identifying them as the white supremacists that they are, that came from outside of the community to cause this damage. I just want that to be clear in our heads as we move forward thinking about this. So really my statement is just of support of what this bill is going to accomplish. and what an honor it is to serve in this body with someone like Chair Lee, who brought forth this legislation. This is a moral imperative that we have. And so I just hope that we're keeping that in mind as we're not trying to put a price tag on humanity. So thank you, Chair Lee, for bringing this legislation forward. I'm in full support.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Berg. Representative Rick Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And listening to the testimony, I think on the presentations, it appears that we do have precedent for similar type of things. I heard appropriation bonds have been used several times before for water infrastructure, for piping. I think I remember, and maybe Representative Davids could correct me, but when we had the Rushford flood, there was redevelopment money, I think money that went to deed. It may not have been appropriation bonds, but I think there was money that went to help reestablish those businesses. And I think the same occurred maybe when we had the Northfield, Faribault, Owatonna floods, and perhaps the Duluth flooding as well. So I applaud Chair Lee for trying multiple paths, because as you know, at the legislature, you need multiple bills sometimes to get something through. So appropriation bonds, I believe, are a novel way of doing it. There's precedent there for basic public support, and I would encourage support for the bill. I'm happy to vote for it.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Lee, and especially thank you to our testifiers today. After I graduated from college, I lived a couple blocks off of Lake Street, so I was familiar as both a customer and a neighbor to some of the businesses that were impacted. And I think all Minnesotans were heartbroken to see the destruction in that neighborhood and others across Minneapolis and St. Paul. And to the testifiers, I just want to say your stories of hard work, pursuing the American dream, and resilience, community commitment that you've shared today are inspiring. And we want you to rebuild, and we want these neighborhoods to come back even more vibrant than before. I wish I could support the bill today, but I don't think it is ready. First, Minneapolis and St. Paul need to address their public safety situation. Business owners need to have the assurance that this type of destruction will not happen again. Second, I think there needs to be more accountability in the administration of these grants. I have concerns that the dollars won't go to those who need it most and were most directly impacted by the destruction. And lastly, I believe that using appropriation bonds sets a bad precedent, especially during a time of budget uncertainty. And so even though I'm unable to support this bill today, I very much appreciate Chair Lee's advocacy and his work on this bill, and especially want to thank today's testifiers for sharing their stories. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Keith Frank. Frankie? Frank? Representative?
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Frankie.
Frankie.
First off, I want to start by thanking Chair Lee for bringing this bill forward, for the fact that you're doing whatever you can, like you said, for your community. And for that, you should be applauded. We do need to take many paths, whatever we can, for our own districts, you know, going forward to give help. And I do agree that we need to help these areas. And as Representative Leon Lilly stated, help our major cities thrive. I want to thank all the business owners for coming forward with your stories. I can somewhat relate. I did have a business catch fire. It did not burn to the ground, but it put me out of business for a year and a half. And the uncertainty and the fear and everything that, you know, I had to go through is still nothing compared to the uncertainty that everyone in that area faces. But I can somewhat relate. I do have questions about the bill going forward. I will personally be seeing this again in workforce, so I'll reach out to you, Representative Fu Lee, and we can have some discussions. I do have some actual questions. In the bill, it talks about land banking. So then these entities will be allowed to purchase land and bank it, is my understanding. But for how long will they hold that land before it is developed? Can anybody answer that question for me?
Ms. Nelson?
Madam Chair, we can see if one of our testifiers from the two cities can speak to this piece,
okay.
Especially folks from the community development team.
All right, Mr. Hansen, Mr. Terrell, Ms. Goodman.
Madam Chair, this is Eric Hansen. So land banking is more of an art than a science. When we do redevelopment, we try and repurpose them and get them back on the tax rolls as fast as possible. But it's every commercial property has its own unique set of circumstances. But the idea is just to have some sort of mechanism that we can hold the property for a period of time as we're trying to find the highest and best use. Most of the time when we do the Commercial Property Development Fund, we would have the end user. So we're not expecting a lot of land banking, but there might be some circumstances that would require it, and then we'd move it through as fast as possible. This is similar to what we do with tax forfeited properties. Sometimes it takes a couple years, and sometimes it takes a lot longer.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Mr. Franke?
Thank you, Madam
Frankie,
Chair.
Is that okay?
Yep, and I have one more question. I'm wondering how in this bill, and I don't know if Chair Lee can answer this or maybe one of the testifiers, does this help the business owners or employees financially with like lost wages or inventories that were lost that were not covered by insurance?
Madam Chair.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Frankie, for the question. And so this one will assist the small businesses with the physical infrastructure. And I do know that Representative Noor, Chair Noor, in the Workforce Committee have a different proposal to address some of the other issues that you brought forward, Representative Frankie, that's not related to physical infrastructure.
Okay.
All right.
Is that Representative Frankie, is that okay?
Yep.
Okay,
thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you, Chair Murphy.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this bill forward. And to the testifiers, like everyone else, I am very touched by your experience. Yes, Mary, I'll pick it up, Madam Chair. First, this is not the Public Safety Committee. This is the Bonding Committee. Let's keep our focus on bonding and not on other extraneous matters. We're here to talk about reinvestment, and we're here because we're dependent on each other. Eagan, my district, needs Minneapolis and St. Paul to be vibrant. It's not either or. We also need the rest of Minnesota to be vibrant, and we invest in each other as a matter of course. Across the decades, we've invested in each other. This is no different. And finally, this is about the businesses. I think we need to set aside the politics. We need to say what is in the interest of our community. We have the opportunity to make a practical difference in the lives of thousands of businesses, business owners, their employees, and the community. And I think we need to take advantage of this now and move quickly so that we can get this done. So I fully support this bill and appreciate the chance to make a statement.
Thank you very much, Representative Breyer. Representative Davids, is your hand up?
It is, Madam Chair, and thank you.
The last hand that's up, and you have 1 minute.
You saved the best for last. My question will go to House Research, Mr. Lee. The appropriation bonds, how will that affect future housing monies? In other words, how can we get How does, if we pass this bill, we don't say it's not going to go to consent, but if, you know, let's say it did, how would it affect future housing appropriation bonds? And also, someone made the comment, paving the way for rural communities. I always thought rural communities paved the way for the metro area, but what do I know? So to Mr. Lee.
Mr. Lee, fiscal analyst.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Davids. Yes, so the these appropriation bonds would count towards the same debt management guideline as other appropriation bonds, so the MHFA housing infrastructure bonds, as well as GO and trunk highway bonds. Current guideline capacity in number one for all state supported debt is $3.37 billion in guideline one. I don't know if that answers your question, but they would all count towards the same pool.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Lee. So this could lower the amount of appropriation bonds available for those other entities. Would that be a correct statement?
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, sort of the total mix of state debt is dependent on however much the legislature authorizes for each of those. If the legislature chose to authorize $3.3 billion in either housing appropriation bonds or GO bonds or trunk highway bonds, that would bring the state close to the limit after a number of years. I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, they all count towards the same pool.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Lee.
Thank you very much. Chair Fu Lee, it's time for House File 728A1 as amended be voted on. Do you have any closing remarks that you would like to make and summary of before we call on the committee members to vote?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, and especially thank you to our testifiers of the public that were here today, and you know, just echo some of my thanks that our members of the committee have said, you know, and all of you being vulnerable and coming before us. I do know that, you know, you have gone through this process several times, whether that's with our local units of government or with the different organizations, philanthropy out there that are helping. And I would encourage members that as we move this bill along the process, you know, my door is always open for all of us to work together to see what can we do to help these two cities and the small businesses that were impacted recover. And you know, we have seen that local and private funding initiatives have helped, but there are needs that remain. And so those sources cannot go alone, and we need appropriation bonds to help with this. And we have to understand that this is an unprecedented and extraordinary situation, and the one-time use of appropriation bond in this manner provide us with a means to release a large amount of funds to provide the needed assistance without putting the general fund ability to provide for other essential areas of our state budget in jeopardy. And so members, I encourage your support, and thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, the testifiers.
Thank you. Chair Lee, this bill is going to go to, from our committee now, to Workforce, Business and Development, Finance and Policy Committee. And then is there a path after that? For another committee, or does it go directly to Ways and Means from Commerce?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that we'll go to the Workforce Development Committee, and if they decide to advance this forward, it will go to Chair Moran's Ways and Means Committee.
All right. Thank you for that guide. Is there any additional comments that, seeing none? Representative Lee, House File 728 as amended. You wish it to move to Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy Committee. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. I renew my motion that House File 728 as amended is referred to the Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy Committee.
Okay. House File 728, as amended, is before us. This is a final vote. We are referring the bill to Workforce Business Development Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor of movement of the bill to Workforce Development and Business Development Finance Policy Committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye. I believe, Madam Chair?
Yes.
We need to take a roll call on the bill for it to move out of the committee.
Oh, okay. All right. Mr. Lencheski, please call the roll.
Representative Fooley.
Lee, aye.
Representative Fooley, aye. Representative Mary Murphy.
Aye.
Representative Mary Murphy, aye. Representative Dean Erdahl.
No today.
Representative Dean Erdahl, nay. Representative Esther Abaje.
Aye.
Representative Esther Abaje, aye. Representative Kayla Berg.
Berg, aye.
Representative Kayla Berg, aye. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids, no.
Representative Greg Davids, nay. Representative Keith Franke. Representative Keith Franke.
No.
Representative Keith Franke, nay. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Mike Freiberg, aye. Representative Rick Hansen.
Rick Hansen, aye.
Representative Rick Hansen, aye. Representative John Hewitt.
Hewitt, aye.
Representative John Hewitt, aye. Representative Leon Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Representative Leon Lilly, aye. Representative Eric Lucero.
No.
Representative Eric Lucero, nay. Representative Rena Moran.
Aye.
Representative Rena Moran, aye. Representative Nels Pearson.
Nay.
Representative Nels Pearson, nay. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh's a nay.
Representative Donald Raleigh, nay. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, nay. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Representative Liz Ryer, aye. Representative Nolan West.
No.
Representative Nolan West, nay. Representative Jay Zhang.
Jay Zhang, aye.
Representative Jay Zhang, aye. 11 ayes and 8 nays.
The motion prevails by a vote of 11 to 8. House File 728, as amended, is referred to the Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy Committee. This meeting is adjourned.